Looking for a new show to dive into? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like the full season of FX's epic limited series, Shogun, FX's new international spy thriller, The Veil, starring Emmy and Golden Globe winner Elizabeth Moss, and don't miss the all-new crime series, Under the Bridge, inspired by shocking true events and starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone. It's all new and it's all streaming now on Hulu.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This summer, click into cordless power with Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. And keep your flower beds looking fresh with the 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Then clear leaves and debris with the 40-volt leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Click into Memorial Day savings happening now at the Home Depot and on HomeDepot.com. How doers get more done.
I got in shape for $2 million. The money these guys are making today, I'd be damn near anorexic for 30. for $35, $40 million a year.
They're making 50, 60, Charles.
I know. They'd be like, we got to get Charles to eat. He's anorexic.
All my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle paid the price. Want a slice, got to roll the dice. That's why all my life, I've been grinding all my life. Look, all my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle, pay the price. Want a slice, got to roll the dice. That's why all my life I've been grinding all my life.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Use code Shannon. New customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's the code Shannon, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. One no-sweat bet per new customer. Issued as one bonus bet based on amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/promos for deposit, wagering, and eligibility restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Club Shay Shay. I am your host, Shannon Sharp. I'm also the proprietor of Club Shay Shay. The guy that's stopping by for conversation and a drink today is a sports icon and a true superstar, one of the game's greatest NBA players and power forwards of all time. He's one of the greatest rebounders of all time. He's the shortest player in NBA history to lead the league in rebounding, a 16-year NBA vet, 11-time NBA All-Star, 11-time member of the All-NBA team, the 1993 Most Valuable Player, All-Star Game MVP, a 2-time gold medalist, the leading scorer on the famous Dream Team. He's also named to the 50th and 75th anniversary team. He has his number retired in Philly, Phoenix, and at the University of Auburn. SEC Player of the 1980s, a 2-time inductee of the Hall of Fame, a 4-time Emmy Award-winning personality, analyst, and commentator, fan favorite, successful author, sought-after speaker, philanthropist, one of the game's greatest character. He was like no other. A larger-than-life personality. He might be the most quotable sports figure in all of sports. Huh? Sir Charles, the round mound of rebound, the prince of pizza. Guess what they call him? The leaning tower of pizza. The Crisco kid, the wide load from Leeds. One of the most popular figures in NBA history. Ladies and gentlemen, Sir Charles Barkley.
Thank you. You wrote that. You read that just like I wrote it. Hey, I appreciate that. Hey, no, man, it's an honor, man. Thank you for having me.
Man, I've been
You know, we've been trying to do this for a long time.
We have. Yeah. Between golf.
I figured out we're crisscrossing each other across the country every week because I'm flying to Atlanta. You're flying to L.A. back and forth. Boy. So I'm glad. It's an honor, though, man. You're doing a hell of a job.
Man, I want to say thank you for opening up. I mean, your NBA career goes without saying, but what you've been able to do to transition after the NBA and to become, a lot of people might not like you, but they respect what you've been able to accomplish. And you open the doors for a lot of us, especially myself, because I took my cue from you, and we'll get into that a little later. So I want to toast your success. This is my cognac.
Hey, you know, we got to talk about your cognac because I can't get into dark liquor, man.
This is so smooth. It don't drink like, but see, it drink, it's a VSOP, but it drinks like an XO.
I'm gonna, you know, tell you what, before we...
That's yours. You get to take that home.
Before we finish today, I'm gonna try some.
Okay.
You got my word.
You got your Redmont.
You know, it's a company, a distillery I bought in Alabama about 4 years ago.
Okay.
You know, being from Alabama, I always look for business opportunities in Alabama.
Right.
And a distillery opened up and I was like, okay, they do vodka gin. I think we got a great product. The only thing I worry about is me and my boys drinking all up the profits. You know, because I'm a vodka guy.
Okay.
But, you know, we do a vodka and a gin. Shout out to Redmont. It's been cool.
Right.
It's a very interesting business. Mm-hmm. When I say interesting, I mean corrupt. It's
the three-tier system?
Yeah, it is. But, you know, long as I invest in Alabama, you know, I grew up in a small town outside of Birmingham, mm-hmm. but I'm always looking for investment opportunities in Alabama.
Right.
That'll always be home.
You grew up in a small town. I grew up in a small town, Leeds, Alabama.
Yeah.
What was Charles Barkley's childhood like?
Well, you know, Shannon, it's interesting because poor people don't know they're poor until they get out.
Because everybody around them is poor.
Everybody around you is poor. You know, I had a great mother and grandmother.
Okay.
My mother was a maid.
Okay.
My grandmother worked at the chicken factory. But they did awesome. And, you know, I had three brothers.
Okay.
Two of my brothers have passed away. But man, we didn't even know we were poor. We lived in the projects.
Right.
And they worked all the time. But we didn't go without anything. So I've always tried to take care of them when they were alive. But I didn't know, like, yo, we had everything we needed. We never went hungry. We always had good clothing. Mm-hmm. And I was so blessed to have a great mother and grandmother. My dad was not in the picture.
Okay.
And me and my dad, we got along later in life, but in the beginning, I had none but animosity and hate toward him.
Because he wasn't around?
Because he wasn't around, and he didn't do anything for us. And to see my mother and grandmother struggling, you know, because, you know, bringing up those boys, trying to make sure we got, you know, cleaning people houses. And my grandmother was crazy. She'd bring 1 million chicken feet home. And for you people who don't know what chicken feet are,
they are what they say.
They are. Feet. And you know what people don't understand, this is a chicken feet. There's only one piece of meat right here. And you have to eat like 100 of them to get a full meal. She would bring all type of body parts home from the butcher shop all the time. But, you know, I made peace with my dad later in life.
Mm-hmm.
And because he died a couple years ago, but we became casual friends. I didn't need a dad by the time we reconnected. But I buried the hatchet because, you know, you can't go through life being angry because
right.
it just weighs you down.
Yes.
But I was so fortunate to have a great mother and grandmother.
The forgiveness that you gave him, that was for you. Because
yes.
he was living his life.
Yes.
You was carrying around something that was weighing you down.
Well, you know, Shannon, that was a really traumatic experience in my life when I was in high school.
Okay.
So when I got ready, it's a couple goals in my basketball career I'm really proud of.
Okay.
Number one, getting my team to the state tournament. My high school had never been to the state tournament. And then getting Auburn to March Madness. Those are two of the most important things I've ever done in my life.
Okay.
But to get back to the high school thing, my junior year, we got beat by a better team.
Okay.
My senior year, we were the best team in the state, but I kind of got hurt. I got hurt and we lost. And I kind of was just so depressed. I kind of stayed in bed for like 2 weeks. I mean, I was so mad. Like, the first year getting them to the tournament was a big deal because they had never been before. The next year, like, I want to bring the first state championship to my high school. And then we lost. I just went into a deep depression. So I got behind in all my classes, and I caught up in every one of them except Spanish. First of all, I have no reason why I was taking Spanish in Alabama. So I caught up in all my classes except Spanish, so I didn't graduate. I had to go to summer school.
Oh, man.
And my dad, who was living in California my whole childhood, flew in, and he ripped me a new asshole. And I'm already traumatized that I'm not going to get to March. And when he flew in, at that point, I just said, hey, man, I ain't never going to forgive this dude ever again for yelling at me like that, because I was already down.
So how often, prior to him flying in to ream you for failing that class, how often had you seen him? How active was he in your life?
Zero.
So that was the that was like he just came in just for that?
Yeah. And I had, and it's my memories vaguely, but I don't think I probably saw him probably 10 times in my childhood. But he flew in for that high school reunion. I didn't know that I had flunked the final exam until right before graduation. And he ripped me a new one. But that night, I went to the high school and I stood next door on the stadium and watched the graduation and cried for like 2 hours. And that night, I said, this is the last time I'm going to let anybody ever have control of my life. I mean, I was crying. It was brutal.
Of course.
And I was standing there just watching all my friends graduate. And some of the people, let's be honest, they wasn't that nice to me. They were calling me dummy and things like that.
Right.
So I was obviously, I was kind of out of it. Then I went to summer school. And then from that point on, I got my act together. But the biggest problem was my first few years in the NBA, I was such an asshole. Because I was playing so angry, because I was thinking about two people, Miss Gomez, and my dad.
Miss Gomez, I'm assuming is a Spanish teacher.
Yes. And you know, people said, "Man, why you play so angry and so aggressive?" And I never told anybody till later. I said, "Man, I was every time I stepped on the court, I said I'm gonna stick it to Miss Gomez and my dad."
Right.
And it wasn't until the spitting incident in New Jersey, when I was sitting in the hotel room crying that night, I said, yo, man, you're an asshole. Don't play basketball to try to stick it to people, the kids who made fun of you in high school, Miss Gomez. First of all, it was your fault you flunked Spanish. It wasn't Miss Gomez's fault.
Mm-hmm.
It was your fault you flunked Spanish. Hey, listen, your dad's an asshole. That's on him.
Right.
Play basketball because, number one, you're good at it.
Mm-hmm.
But It's just play. And that was like the turning point in my life. You know, and the second turning point was probably meeting Moses Malone.
Right.
Because when I got, because I was in college for 3 years and I weighed about 290-ish to 300. I was always fluctuating right in there. And then when I got drafted by the Sixers, because I led the league in SEC rebound area. So, I think I'm successful.
Right.
And I'm in good shape.
Right.
But you
so there's no reason for you to lose weight if you're doing all that.
Yes. And, you know, because you've been a Hall of Famer, obviously, college shape ain't pro shape.
No.
Yeah, college shape ain't pro shape. It's a different animal.
It is.
And I remember I got lucky because Moses lived in the same building as me.
Okay.
And I said, Moses, I wasn't getting to play. I said, Moses, can I come see you tonight? He said, sure. Like, what's up? I said, I'll tell you later. And I said, Moses, why am I not getting to play? He said, Charles, you're fat and you're lazy.
And he was that blunt, huh?
Oh, yeah. He was great. He's like E.F. Hutton. He didn't say much.
Right.
But he was such an elder statesman and was so respected. He was like E.F. Hutton. Like, every time Moses said something, because Doc spoke, Andrew Toney, Bobby Jones, those
Mo
guys.
Cheeks was there.
Yeah, Mo Cheeks, too. But there were Moses never really said a lot. But when he spoke, that whole locker room, like, Moses talking, shut the hell up. And when he told me I was fat and lazy, but then he said the next thing, he said, you want me to help you lose weight? And he said, I'll meet you before practice, after practice. And he said, let's lose 10 pounds. I said, okay. And then I got to about 290. And then he said, let's lose 10 more. Then I get to 280. Now I'm getting to play.
Okay.
Because I can sustain it. You can't sustain effort.
Mm-mm.
At 300.
Correct.
So now I'm at 280. He's saying, let's lose 10 more. He gets me to 270, 260, 250. And I look back at that when I talk to kids about losing weight. I said, let's lose some weight. Because if you had said to me, let's lose 50 pounds, I was like, whoa. But he did it in such a smart way. He said, let's lose 10 pounds. Let's lose 10. And then when I got to 250, the rest is history.
Right. I'm looking at your childhood. I read that your grandmother ran a bar.
No, she didn't run a bar. We had people come to the house get drunk every weekend. No, see, so it was, and you think that's normal.
Right.
And what's crazy about it, Shannon, it was a fight every weekend. Every weekend.
Yeah, because the drinking involved, yeah. And gambling, probably.
So that's what it was. So we didn't have a bar.
Okay.
In my hometown.
Oh, okay.
So every starting Friday.
Pay period.
Everybody, because now, you know, everybody's trying to make extra money.
Yeah.
And do you know, once they start losing, it's going to be a fight because they start drinking. So my grandmother would go to Georgia every week and get cheaper alcohol. Mm-hmm. And me, and she'd do shots. So I was kind of like the guy who bought the shots out.
Right.
And then go back to my room. Charles, come here. I need another drink. But starting Friday around 6 o'clock.
Okay.
10 people would come over and gamble. And then it always started out civil. And then once somebody got drunk and started losing their money, it was always going to be a fight.
Of course.
And we did that every Friday and Saturday, pretty much my entire childhood. And that's how we made extra money, because you're not making enough money working in a meat factory and as a maid.
Right.
But it was crazy because my grandmother, she was amazing. But it was crazy. It's crazy thinking about it now.
Right.
Yeah.
What kind of lessons did that teach you? Seeing your grandmother doing what she could to make ends meet. You see your mom doing what she can to make ends meet. There's four boys going on. You're not getting the assistance that you need,
yeah,
from your dad. You're not getting the love, the advice, the discipline from your, yeah, dad. So what kind of impact did that have on you?
Well, so I had started stealing. And one night the cops chased us. That was the closest we all got to getting arrested. And I remember when I was crawling on the ground in the woods, because they chased us. They were chasing us, and we were crawling. Must have crawled like 100, 200 yards.
Okay.
And I remember I had dirt everywhere and scars everywhere. And I was like, damn, my mother and grandmother are working their ass off every day, and you out here being a crook. And then that's when I said, you know what? I got to give these ladies the love and the respect they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
So then I said, you know what? I'm going to just play sports.
Right.
And then what's really funny about it, I sucked at sports. I wasn't any good. Because I didn't have my growth spurt. Most people don't know that. I was only 5'10 when I was a junior in high school. If I hadn't had the growth spurt, ain't no telling what I would be doing today. Because right. I was a 5'10 backup point guard. And then one year I grew from 5'10 to 6'5.
I mean, but at 5'10, you probably weighed probably what, 175, 180?
No, I was like 220.
That's football player right there, Chuck. You should have been a running back.
Yeah, let me tell you something. My friends make fun of me. I played football for one day. You know, football is my favorite sport in boxing.
Okay.
Because I think it takes a real man to play football and box. Because those are the only sports you can really get hurt at.
Right.
And I was like, I played football for one day. And I was like, and I just joked with the football coach later, after I had my growth spurt and I was later in life. He's like, I think I made a mistake putting you on the offensive line. I says, no, you made a mistake talking me into playing football. Because I played the one day and I just ran into a guy full speed for like 2 hours. This is the stupidest shit ever. And I remember I was sitting in the locker room. I was bloody and beaten up. And I had my head down. I was totally, this is the first day of practice. And the coach says, I'll see y'all tomorrow. I said, wait, we're doing this tomorrow? And I said, I'm not doing this tomorrow. I said, no, under no circumstances. I said, coach. And I went, and after practice, I went out to coach. I want to thank you for the opportunity. But football.
You turn your equipment back in?
Right back in after that first day. This is not for me. This is not for me.
Right.
But like I say, one of the reasons football is my favorite sport, I think it takes tremendous courage. That and boxing are by far and away my two favorite sports.
Right.
Because you can't cheat in football and boxing. Basketball, you can skate on offense or defense and, you know, whatever. But if you're on a football field, you cannot cheat. Mm-mm. Same thing in a boxing ring. No. You're going to get your head knocked off.
Right.
That's why I admire football players and boxers, because it takes tremendous courage to go out there.
Right. You're born in Alabama. We understand the history of racism in Alabama.
Yeah.
Did you experience any racism growing up when you was in that small town of Alabama?
No, because the year I was born was the church bombing. Mm-hmm. You got the Selma massacre. Mm-hmm. You got the Montgomery boycott. My grandmother, in my town, it was. I think it was a great place to grow up, because we weren't in a small town. I don't even think we really know what the hell going on. I've experienced more racism. I've seen more racism when I got out of there, okay. Obviously. And, I was one of the first two kids to integrate the school system.
Right.
And we didn't know what the hell was going on. Mm-hmm. I didn't find out till later. There was a guy named Mr. Allen who drove me and two other kids, actually, to segregate, to integrate the schools.
The elementary school.
But I never felt racism in Leeds, to be honest with you.
That accent.
Yeah.
I have one very heavy colloquial dialect that's indigenous to the South.
Yes.
Did people make fun of the way you spoke, or did everybody speak like that?
I didn't realize it until I got to Philadelphia. because I spent my entire life in Alabama. one of the great decisions I made was going to Auburn.
Wow.
Well, okay, so obviously, you know by now, I'm really close to my mother and grandmother. I'm going to stay in the box.
Right.
UAB is 25, 30 minutes from my house. Tuscaloosa is an hour 15 from my house. Auburn's the furthest way by far. It's like a legit 2 hours. Mm-hmm. So when I was trying to figure out where to go to college, UAB, led by the great Gene Bartow, made it to the Sweet 16. Alabama made it to the Sweet 16. And they both had everybody coming back.
Yeah. Bobby Lee Hurt, Enos Watley.
Well, no, we came out together. Not only did they both make it to the Sweet 16, Alabama signed Enos Watley and Bobby Lee Hurt. So I'm saying to myself, man, I want to play.
Right.
So I go down to Auburn, and I said, I'm looking around. I said, damn, these bombs done lost 12 games in a row. So I asked Coach Smith, I said, you got a pen on you? He said, oh, what, you a big time? You getting ready to sign an autograph? I said, nope, I'm signing right now, because these damn guys can't play dead. Y'all done lost 12 games in a row. And I don't see anybody out there who put fear in my heart. And that's actually how the whole thing at Auburn went down. I said, he said, you gonna sign autographs? I said, nope, I'm signing a scholarship right on the spot. Cause these dudes cannot play dead. And that's how I made the best decision to go to Auburn, because I tell all these kids, some of these kids are dummies. I said, yo man, look who they have on the team before you go there.
Right.
If you know there's a guy who's really good and you play the same position, no matter how much confidence you got, you're probably not going to beat him out. He's going to be bigger, stronger, more experienced. The number one thing, I said, if you want an education, you get an education anywhere. Mm-hmm. But the number one thing when you're deciding to go to college is playing time, because that's going to be the first time you're away from home. Mm-hmm. And if you don't get to play, college is going to suck. Your grades going to suck. Your personal life going to suck. You really need to look at who's on the roster before you decide to go.
So you said you didn't realize that you had an accent until you got to Philly. Once you got to Philly, did you ever try to change the way you talk or enunciate words?
No, not really. Because as you know, fame ain't like everybody. Trying to explain being in limelight of fame, whatever words you want to use, trying to explain that to a normal person is like talking Chinese or talking to an alien.
You're not a sports. Yeah. You're a celebrity, Joe.
Yeah. Yeah, but when I first, like, it's overwhelming when it first happens.
Yes.
I said, you can't even prepare for it. Mm-mm. I said, when they start sticking those cameras and you turn on TV, they talking good or bad about you in Philadelphia on the radio, going to the black barbershop, hey, never go to a black barbershop when you're on a bad team, ever. Hey, under any circumstances, I tell you, the Woody Brothers in Philadelphia, man, I played on some teams that suck in Philly when Doc and Moses had went away. Never go to a black barbershop when things are going bad.
They will tell you the truth.
They will tell you the truth. And even if it's not your fault, they're just going to tell you, y'all suck. Y'all suck. But no, I was trying to adjust. And a really important, a pivotal moment happened when I was with Dr. J. So my second year in the league, I'm starting to become a good player. Mm-hmm. And I hate when guys get on TV and say they don't give a shit what people think, blah, blah, blah. Everybody wants to be liked.
They do.
But I was trying to make everybody happy. They started, because my first couple years, they went to Moses, Dr. J, Maurice Cheeks, Andrew Toney, those guys, Bobby Jones. Like, I don't think I ever got interviewed in my rookie year. So late in my second year, I'm starting to get it together, learn, the game's slowing down for me.
Looking for a new show to dive into? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Don't miss the full season of FX's epic limited series, Shogun. Set in feudal Japan, Shogun tells the story of one warrior in the fight of his life as a mysterious European ship arrives in Japan. Catch FX's new international spy thriller, The Veil, starring Emmy and Golden Globe winner Elizabeth Moss. The Veil is a globe-trotting game of truth and lies between two women with thousands of lives hanging in the balance. And crime fans, don't miss the all-new series, Under the Bridge, inspired by shocking true events, starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone. Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now and is waiting for you on Hulu.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
I'm like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. He's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't me.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And Dr. J, I said, Doc, how do I talk to the press? He said, well, figure it out, because they're coming to you now. You turn into a hell of a player. I said, well, I want everybody to like me. He says, well, that's kind of an interesting question, because no matter what you say, half the people going to like it and half the people going to dislike it. And I said, what does that mean? He says, that's the way this thing works. You can't make everybody happy. And then that was the turning point for me. I said, what if I just say my truth? He says, you might as well say your truth. Because even if you said what everybody wants you to say, some people are going to disagree with it. And then I changed my whole philosophy as far as like, just be honest. Mm-hmm. That does not mean I'm right all the time.
Right.
But I'm going to try to be fair and give my honest opinion. And I can live with the repercussions, because you said something earlier, whether people like me or not, they at least got like, you know what, at least Charles, even if I disagree with him, he doesn't have a hidden agenda. Because
right.
The one thing I hate about these guys, somebody, and you know I got this hate towards Skip Bayless, because especially being black, I think I'm representing some bigger.
Mm-hmm.
I think every black person on television, is really powerful.
Yeah.
Really. Mike Wilbon, one of my mentors, one of the best people I ever met, he said something to me one time. He says, when he first got the job at PTI, one of my favorite shows with him and Kornhauser, he says, man, I didn't realize how powerful television was. He says, I've been with the Washington Post for 25 years. I walk around, nobody say hello, kiss my ass or anything. I'm on TV for a week. Hey, you're the guy from TV. And he said he had to learn, like, man, TV is a powerful thing. But the point I want to make as a black person, I'm really conscious of everything I say.
You got to be.
You got to be. Because there is a double standard.
It is.
Because one thing that drives me crazy, when people use code word describing me, you, Stephen A, mm-hmm. guys like that, I says, and I want to be very careful because I'm not trying to offend anybody, but I want to make this point. I says, well, I'm curious. You don't use those type of words. You use words, and we know what they mean, black. When you talk about Shannon, Stephen A, and Chuck, I said, but when Colin Coward, Jim Rome, Mike Greenberg, who are great guys, I might add, when they say stuff, you don't use those cold words with them. And I says, so I'm very cognizant of, like, okay, there's a double standard. So I'm really careful about some of the stuff I say. But I'm not afraid of anything, mm-hmm. Because my opinion matters just like theirs do.
Right.
Yeah.
But we, I think we start to understand is that it's not what we say, it's the breaking up down yeah. of everything, of yeah. every word,
yeah.
of parsing it, yeah. trying to like, well, this, no,
this is my favorite. Well, when I see shows like, well, this is what he said, but this is what he meant. I'm like, no, I know what I meant.
I said it.
Yeah, I said it. But I always laugh when they say, like, well, he said this, but this is what he mean. This is what he was trying to say. I'm like, no, I said exactly what I meant to say. It drives me crazy when I see not mainly saying about me, but talking about other people. Well, this jock said this, because Jim Rome says something I really love. He says, every time somebody says, I mean, no disrespect.
It's disrespectful.
You know what's coming next?
Disrespect.
Jim Rome, who I really like a lot, he does a segment every week where he says that. He says, you know, it's time for the disrespect moment. And he always played the point, well, I mean, no disrespect. He said, wait for it. You know what's coming next? Disrespect. And I love that.
Right. When you played, were you a trash talker?
Not much. Cause I had too much going on in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're 6'5", playing against a 6'8" guy, 6'9" guy, 6'10" guy, I have to have a strategy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think somebody said something to me one time, they went and looked at the numbers. I'm the only person in the history of sports who never played against anybody who was shorter than them. Because I played center in college.
Right.
And then obviously in NBA, I'm always going to be the shortest guy.
Power forward in history.
Yeah, in history. So I says, I had so much going on in my brain. I'm like, okay, they bringing this guy in. He does this well. He does this. He plays me this way. Then they bring the other guy in. I said, well, he plays me this way. They're going to do this. So I had so much going on in my brain. I mean, because like I say, when you can't out talent. I mean, if you're Michael, LeBron, Kobe, Shaq, you can out-talent 99% of the guys in the world. But when you're a 6'5 power forward, you can't out-talent people. I tell people that you can't out-talent people at my size. You have to use your brain.
Right. Did you fight a lot as a kid?
No, because I was too little. You can see that's the thing that people don't understand. Like, I was always small until I had the growth spurt.
Right.
When you, like I say, when you're a little dude, you can't be going around fighting people because you're going to get your ass kicked. It was, you know, people always ask me, though, about the growth spurt.
Yeah.
I never had any pain.
Really?
Cause when you wake up one day and you're 5'10", and then the next day you're 6'5", like, I never went through like this.
Knees didn't bother you.
No.
Back, nothing hurt.
It was really weird. It never hurt me.
But could you tell that you had grown that much over the summer?
I did not know it. That's what's weird. The coach said to me, "You grown over the summer?" I said, "I think I've grown a little bit." And then he said, "Like you like 6'4" and a half, 6'5". And
from 5'10"?
Yeah. And the best thing though, Shannon, the best thing was, because the number one asset of my game was my ability to dribble.
Yes.
Because you can't post up guys who are 6'9", 6'10", but they don't want to move their feet.
Great.
So when I played guard all those years, that was probably the best asset to me when I got to play against those big guys.
Thought you'd handle the ball.
Yeah, yeah. Because them big dudes, the one thing, like, it's hard to post them up, but they can't move their feet more than one or two times. And that was the biggest asset of my game, my ability to dribble.
If you grow that much in a summer, I mean, your clothes, you probably looking like Jethro Bodine. You probably,
well, that's the one thing about being poor. you're just dropping down.
Oh, so you wearing hand me down.
You're wearing hand me down. Because, you know, we ain't going to get no, you know, you're going to get your one suit for Easter.
Yeah.
You're going to get a couple outfits for Christmas. The rest of the stuff is going to be hand-me-downs.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and also, when you're in a small town, it's a very close-knit community. Mm-hmm. So when you get done with clothing, it's always a neighbor.
Somebody needs
somebody to get something. That's why I'll always appreciate growing up in a small town. You know, Kenny grew up in New York. I wouldn't want to unsure how my life would have been different if I had grown up in New York. But growing up in a small town, it was a sense of community.
Community.
Yes.
Everybody. I mean, and that's what when I'm on Nightcap and I try to tell people this, it was always everybody. It was yes, sir, no, sir, yes, yes. Ma'am, no, ma'am. If you misbehave, Miss Such and Such would tear your tail up.
You're going to get two whippings.
And then she's going to go home and say, Mary, I had to whip that boy because he was being managed. Yep. Or he was cursing. And then you got another whipping.
Yep.
What happened to that sense of community, Chuck?
You know, we in the black community, we just have to do better. We got to, number one, racism exists. Mm-hmm. Always has and always will. You know, I tell people this, sports are a great thing for black kids. It's really helped a lot of us get out of here and help and go back and make things better. But you have to understand some, if you're born, and it's white poor too.
Oh yeah.
Cause it's really economic racism. Like calling people names and stuff like that, that's just silly and stupid. But economic racism is the biggest problem we have in this country.
Right.
Because if you're black and poor, or white and poor, you're gonna be born in a bad neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
and you're gonna go to an inferior school.
Mm-hmm.
And I always use this analogy. I says, if you play baseball, and if every time you step up to the plate, you got two strikes against you,
mm-hmm.
yeah, Shannon gonna get a hit, Chuck gonna get a hit, and we're gonna have a couple of hits.
Right.
But most people are gonna strike out.
Yes. Or you're afraid to swing.
Yeah.
You're gonna get that third strike.
So I just think that we got to do a better job of holding each other accountable and accept the fact that, hey, it's a double standard.
Mm-hmm.
But you can never give up. You can never be like, you know what, I'm tired. Because let's be realistic, it's still better than it used to be.
Yes.
It ain't perfect, but it's still better than it used to be.
Check this out. When you got to Auburn, you weighed 300 pounds. The first 200 days in college, it's reported that you ordered 100 pieces. But you led the SEC in rebounding your 3 years you were there. You hold the record for the career field goal percentage at almost 63%. You was SEC Player of the Year and the Decade of the 80s. And you're a member of the Auburn's All-Century team. How the hell you do that at 300 pounds?
Man, I had some serious talent, to be honest with you. And like I say, the college game is not near as fast. And you know, we just live in a different generation, a lot faster now. But you know, you kind of, unless you get a fast break, because when teams score, you're walking the ball up and down the court.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really interesting. One of my coaches, Roger Banks, I struggled like the first week I was in college. He says, "Son, what is your problem?" Because I averaged 20 rebounds a game in high school. Because I played with a really good high school team. And they never ran plays for me, so I had to get my own.
and you were passing it back out. You going?
No. So we had about 8 players who got scholarships. We had really good teams. Wow. Yeah, we had really good sports teams in my hometown. Because, you know, a lot of times when people in small towns, they got like 3 high schools. The one thing about my high school, we got 1 high school. You go K to 12 with the same group. So we always had good sports team.
Well, you didn't go K to 12 in the same class, did you?
No, but I'm telling you, it was crazy. You see the same people from K to 12.
Right.
And it's so funny how, like, we always had a good team in football and basketball. Mm-hmm. Always had a good team in football and basketball.
Did it ever dawn on you? You're like, well, man, I'm really killing it. I'm playing. I'm averaging 13, 14, 15 points. I'm getting 10, 12 rebounds. Man, if I lost a few pounds, I might be able to bump that up to do 20, 15. Did that ever cross your mind in college?
No, because when you know, the toughest thing about a player, and you know this, and a team, kind of happened to my Eagles this year. When they got off to like a 10-1 start, a lot of times what people don't understand, when you're having success, you still need to get better as a player and as a team. Mm-hmm. And have, because you can have bad habits, but you have, your team is so good, you keep winning.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure, but like, I'm probably the only freshman to ever lead the SEC in rebounding.
Mm-hmm.
And then I led it every year. So I'm not thinking about flaws. I think I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah.
So I'm not thinking about, yo, man, lose weight. I'm like, yo, I'm all SEC. I'm leading the league in rebound as a freshman, as a sophomore, as a junior. And I'm like, no, I'm good. And, you know, actually, my coach tried to get me to lose weight, and We fought a little bit early in my career. We're really close today because I had to go back and apologize. I said, you know what? You were right. You were right. I was wrong. I should have lost weight sooner. I could have been better. But, you know, when you're 18 and having success, you don't think anything. You're good.
You think you're the bees.
Yeah. So it goes back to my thing with Miss Gomez and my dad. Like, you know what? It's you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I tell you, the one thing about being in the limelight, man, very few people have the ability to say, my fault, my bad.
Yeah. There ain't a whole lot of accountability going on.
There's a lot of people kissing your ass.
Right.
Yeah, very few people have the ability to say, hey, you know what? It's my fault. It's my bad. Mm-hmm. I was wrong. Because like I said, you got so many people kissing your ass. You got so many people on the payroll who are kissing your ass. It's like, so you have to be self-aware. And that's the only thing I hate about life. All the dumb shit you did, you get older, you get so much smarter and get so much wisdom, and you go back, man, what a dummy I was. And
but nobody told you that was dumb.
No, yeah. But you know, that's the one thing about life that I really hate, that you don't learn all this smart stuff till you get older. Because there's so many people out there who make mistakes that they either die from or it ruins their life.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get older, you're like, man, what I did back then was dumb and stupid. And I wish that more young kids would pick up, talk to people like you, me, because we've been through some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I watch you all the time, you talk about preparing for success. You talk about your time in Denver. You talk about your time with the Ravens, about trying to teach the young guys how to do things, take care of their bodies and things like that. I tell these guys, yo, man, it's like Zion. I like Zion a lot.
Does he remind you of you?
He reminds me. I mean, he's more exclusive.
He's more athletic than you.
Yeah, he's more athletic. But the sooner he gets in shape, the better he's going to be.
Have you had a conversation with him?
No. But and I don't know him, but I try to tell him that on television. I hope he hears it and don't take it as a criticism, because like he has got so much talent, and you can't get in shape during the season.
No,
you get in shape during the summer.
Correct.
And I see that he's lost about 25 pounds. That's what the reports are during the season. You got to do that during the summer, because you got to be ready to go when the season starts. Because he is so explosive. Because that last game that he got hurt in.
Against the Lakers.
That's the best I've ever seen him play. But you, man, and listen, I got in shape for $2 million. the money these guys are making today, I'd be damn near anorexic for 30. for $35-40 million a year.
They're making 56, you chump.
I know. I mean, they'd be like, we got to get Charles to eat. He's anorexic. I was like, my first contract was 4 years, $2 million.
Right.
And I said, I lost 50 pounds for that type of money. I said, for 30, 40, 50, $60 million? They'd be like, yo, guys, Charles is losing too much weight. We got to make sure he ain't bulimic or something. I said, man, I just hope he listens.
Right.
And don't take it. Because guys who've been in this business like yourself and myself, man, it's just the best job in the world.
But sometimes you need to take constructive criticism. But the problem is that a lot of time athletes, and I've been one and now I'm on the other side, is that we have people around us that tell us what we want to hear, not what we need to know.
Yes.
And so a person that tells you what you need to know, you're less apt to move away from that person.
Yes.
And keep the people that's telling you what you want to hear around.
Yeah.
They should tell him. He should see it. Because when I first saw him, I say he reminds me of Charles Barkley, but he's more explosive than Chuck.
Yes.
But if he lost, if he got down to 250,
they'd have to change. That'd be like, because the thing he did against the Lakers in that one game, he could do that every night. And that goes back to my original thing. Like, I could have a couple good plays when I was 300 pounds.
Right. Couldn't sustain it.
But I couldn't sustain it. When I got to 250, I could sustain it.
Mm-hmm.
And I could go the next day and the next day, the next day. And I hope, you know, these guys, and I hate to be the old man, because, you know, when you say something or I say something.
We hate.
What we hate, or we the old get off my lawn guys. I'm like, no, we know how this story ends.
Right.
I says, let me tell you something. I know how every NBA story is going to end. I played against Bird. I played against Magic, Kareem, Michael. I know what it takes to be successful. And
You know what it takes to be great.
Yes. And you know, the thing is, it's like, let's talk about drugs. I had a younger brother who was a junkie who died at a young age. When I talk to these young kids in high school or college about drugs, I said, yo, man, it ain't a matter if, it's a matter of when. You know, it broke my mom's heart. It broke my heart for a long time. I said, yo, man, I don't understand why you got to do drugs. I just don't get it. And I almost did cocaine one time because, you know, I had put my brother in a bunch of rehabs and I was like, what's the fuck up with this? And I talked to one of my boys. I says, yo, man, I want you to get me some cocaine. He says, Charles, you fucking nuts. I says, man, my brother, he gonna die at some point. And I ain't never had something so strong that I would give up the NBA or my money, saying, you know, I gotta do drugs.
And he knows it's killing him, but he can't stop doing it.
John Lucas, who's a great, great man, he said, Chuck, I'm gonna tell you something about a junkie. He says, if I put $1 million on this table cash and a pile of cocaine over there, or crack, or whatever you wanna say, a junkie would not say, man, I can buy a lot of cocaine with that money. He gonna go right for that pile over there. And my brother died, I think he was 40 when he died. He got his life together. He got his life together, but he had done so much damage to his body. And it just gave out. And when I talk to these kids, I say, yo, man, it ain't a matter if, it's just a matter of when. If you doing this drug thing, somebody in your family gonna get a call one night that it's over.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I felt so bad for my mom because she never got over it.
Wow.
Never got over it.
Right. You come out, the NBA, the 1994 draft. Now, excuse me, 84 draft. The 84 draft, Michael Jordan, John Stockton, Charles Barkley, Hakeem Olajuwon. The first three were Hall of Fame. I mean, Olajuwon went, I think he went first.
Yes.
Jordan went third.
Sam Bowie went
second. Y'all had Hall of Famers. The 85 draft, Karl Malone, Patrick Ewing, Chris Mullins, Charles Oakley, Joe Dumars. 87, David Robinson, Reggie Miller, Scottie Pippen, Horace Grant, Mark Jackson, Muggsy Bogues. 96 draft, Kobe, Ray Allen, Steve Nash, Allen Iverson, Stephon Marbury, Derek Fisher. And obviously the 2003 draft.
Yeah.
LeBron, D-Wade, Chris Bosh, Melo. All Hall of Famers. What's the best draft?
Well, I don't know if you can say who's the best draft. You know, I give you an example why I say that. Tom Brady, Joe Montana, Dan Marino. They're in the conversation of the greatest quarterbacks ever. And Pat Mahomes on.
Looking for a new show to dive into? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Don't miss the full season of FX's epic limited series, Shogun. Set in feudal Japan, Shogun tells the story of one warrior in the fight of his life as a mysterious European ship arrives in Japan. Catch FX's new international spy thriller, The Veil, starring Emmy and Golden Globe winner Elizabeth Moss. The Veil is a globe-trotting game of truth and lies between two women with thousands of lives hanging in the balance. And crime fans, don't miss the all-new series, Under the Bridge, inspired by shocking true events, starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone. Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now and is waiting for you on Hulu.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think. Love he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. Crying. I mean, he was in a culture shock. He's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't it.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's ascending.
Yeah.
Those guys ain't never going to be near the record books in 5 to 10 years. And they're some of the best
to ever do it.
The games have changed. The rules have changed. Doesn't make better or worse. It's just different.
Should we consider that when we're talking about greatness because of the rule change in football?
I think you have to. Like, I don't care who. Think about this. There's probably going to be 10 quarterbacks in the next 5 years that's going to shatter all the records. And they're going to be one-third the player, Tom Brady, Joe Montana, Dan Marino, Drew Brees, Peyton Manning. Mm-hmm. Those guys going to be, they probably won't, think about it, in 10, 15 years, not probably won't even be that long, they won't even be in the top 10 yardages and mm-hmm. touchdown passes because the rules have changed.
Right.
And it's obviously just now, number one, they're going to pass it.
Yeah.
More, a lot more, but also defense is a handicap mm-hmm. right now also. So all the players you mentioned are great, great, great. But it is just a lot easier to play basketball. Because I tell people, Michael, I played. When you played them boys from the Pistons, we used to always say, call your family, tell them you love them and goodbye. Because there was a chance you wasn't going to make it out. They were trying to hurt people. They had 6 guys who used their fouls. You know what's so crazy? That when I was watching that the documentary, The Last Dance, some of those fouls would get you suspended for 10 games today.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. And it was just one foul back then.
Yeah. Bill Laimbeer would have been out of the league for at least 30 games.
At least.
Because he was deliberate with his.
Yes.
Ain't no hiding or nothing.
The same thing with Mahorn, John Sally, Dennis Rodman. I mean, think about it. You go back and, because Laimbeer, all the guys. So, the rules have changed. they're not, like I say, I don't ever say things are better.
Right.
But all these guys are great. And I was blessed to play in a generation because the two most important figures in NBA history were Magic Johnson and Larry Bird.
Right.
If it wasn't for those two guys, and Reese has something to do with that.
Yes.
Reese has something to do with that.
It drew a line.
But it's still the best thing that ever happened to the NBA.
It is.
Because before then, the average salary then was $200,000. When Magic and Bird came in, because first of all, it was too black, too thuggish, too drug-infest, and we were tape-delayed.
People don't realize that.
They don't even know that.
The NBA Finals was on tape-delayed.
And, Shannon, you got one game a week on Sunday.
You did. I remember.
You got one game a week on Sunday. And people now, you can watch a game 7 days a week. We own
all the games.
All the games. I said, no, you don't understand. This how, and like I say, it was a long time ago, but think about it. The finals were tape delayed. Mm-hmm. And there was only one game on Sunday. And the average salary was $200,000. The average salary now is $10 million. We got what's going to be crazy. We got three NBA players, I think, three or four, making $60 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
In the next 5 years, we're going to have guys making 70, 80, 80, 90, 80, 90.
Luka will probably be first.
It's going to be crazy.
80 a year, Chuck.
Yeah, 80 a year to play basketball.
Good.
And what's crazy, Shannon, this is how old I am. I remember vividly me, Doc, Moses, Bobby Jones, Andrew Toney, we were in the locker room one day, and it broke that Magic Johnson had been the first NBA player to make $1 million. We were walking around high-fiving each other. We could not believe that an NBA player made $1 million.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I'm with Doc and Moses now, who are all-time greats. They're high-fiving each other. They're like, we can't believe an NBA player to make it $1 million. That's how crazy it was thinking about money back in the day.
Wow. It was reported that you didn't want to go to Philly so bad that in a 48-hour span, you ate two Denny Grand Slam breakfasts, six pancakes, bacon, totaling about 1,600 calories, a vanilla milkshake, Kentucky Fried Chicken bucket, mashed potatoes, coleslaw, half the menu at Red Lobster, two McDonald's fish fillets, large fries. I don't know why the hell you had a Diet Coke.
To wash it down.
Two Texas-sized barbecue sandwiches, a T-bone steak, baked potato, three desserts, repeated it for the next day, gained 20 pounds, also while drinking. What the hell? You could have killed yourself. You could have went to a food coma.
I could have been poor, too. So, you know, they had a really hard cap.
Right.
So I'm with my agent. So I, you know, you do your visits.
Yeah.
The owner of the 76ers says, put me on the scale. I'm weighing about 295. This is about a month before the draft. He says, you know, we're concerned about your weight. I says, well, I'm going to get in shape. I think I'm, but whatever, blah, blah, blah. He says, we want you to lose 10 pounds. We want you to come in the day the draft, stop in Philly on your way to New York for the draft. So I go train for a month down in Houston. I think at the time I'm weighing about 282, 283, somewhere in there.
I don't know if that's going to happen in a month, Chuck.
No, I got down. It was only like 12 pounds.
Okay. He wanted you to get to 280. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. You're 282.
He says, we want you to get to 285.
Okay.
So I go down to Houston and train for a month. And I'm like 282. And we get on the scale. He says, now, Chuck, we have a problem. I said, what's the problem? He says, well, the Sixers are they're at the cap. They can only give you a one-year deal for $75,000. I said, I didn't leave college for $75,000. Are y'all crazy? He says, well, I don't know what to tell you. He says, Sixers want to take you. I said, I don't want to. I said, I didn't leave college for 1 year for $75,000. What if I get hurt?
Right.
I'm trying to take care of my family, set my family up for financial for life.
Yeah.
He says, well, if the Sixers draft you, you're going to sign a one-year deal for $75,000. I said, what can we do? He says, well, we're stopping in Philly on the way to New York. Man, we went right to Denny's. I got a grand slam. I canceled workouts for the next 2 days. I got me a grand slam. We went out. I got me some shakes. Went to a big steakhouse the night before. Got me the big T-bone. Got me some fries. Got me a big old piece of cake. Did the same thing the next day. I get back to Philly. We stop. I'm 298. The owner team called me. And me and my agents looked at each other like, whew, thank God we dodged a bullet. And if you go back and look at my face and out of the draft, and that sweet burgundy suit, I might add. Man, when they said with the number 5 pick, the 76 select Charles Barkley, the look on my face, I'm in shock. And I'm thinking, damn, I left college for $75,000. I got to be the biggest fool in the world. And so we go down to Philly, and he says, you know, go to the summer league. And I said, well, I got no choice. So I go to summer league, and I start just whooping ass. I got this. And he says, okay, we're going to trade some players because we're not going to make you sign a one-year deal. And they traded Franklin Edwards and I think Mark Ivarone. And my first deal was 4 years, $2 million.
Mm-hmm. You was on the court when Doc and Larry got into it. What caused that?
Man, first of all, I hate the NBA for that reason. They owe me $5,000. I'm still pissed to this day. Because the one thing I would never do is hold a guy for another guy to hit him. And I've been mad. I'm still mad this day. Y'all owe me $5,000, Adam Silver. So Larry Bird was a great trash talker.
Okay.
And he's like, Charles, y'all better get this old man off me. I'm telling you. And he's just roasting Doc.
Yeah.
He's like, and this was Doc last year, I think. He was right there. It was either last year or the year before. And he's killing Doc. And he's like, Chuck, I'm telling you for the last time, you better get over here because I'm going to kill this old man. And it goes on up and down. And Larry just killing him. And Doc had just had enough. And I just had him, they come together, and I just kind of grab Larry. I'm not even looking at Doc. When I went back and looked at the tape, Doc was nailing his ass. I was just trying to pull guys apart.
Yeah, but you know you can't ever fight. You can't grab one unless somebody grab you. Hey, you grab him.
I grabbed Larry because I didn't want him hitting Doc.
But ain't nobody grabbed Doc.
I know. I know. But you just said something. If I grab Doc and Larry start pummeling, I can't go back to Philly.
Right.
I can't go back to Philly. So I grabbed Larry to stop him from hitting Doc, and Doc wailing away. But Doc, it started because Doc was like, Larry's like, yo, man, y'all better get, and he's screaming it too, everybody can hear it. Y'all better get this old man off me, I'm gonna kill him out here. Larry's one of the, oh, I tell you, Larry Bird was one of the best trash talkers ever. So one of my teammates, Leon Wood, was great, he's an NBA official now.
Yes, he.
So we're in the room getting ready for the three-point contest at an All-Star game. Larry walks in, says, which one of y'all gonna come in second place? Y'all heard me. Which one of y'all gonna come in second place? And I'm like, damn, that was like my first real talk to him. Ooh, that sounded pretty aggressive. He won though. He won. I mean, he was one of the best at trash talking, man. When he came in there and said that, you could have heard a pin drop. Everybody's all excited and everything.
Everybody was geek.
Yeah, was geek. Larry walked in and said, which one of y'all gonna come in same place? Second place, you could have heard a pin drop.
You probably played, when you look at the era in which you played, Magic, Bird, Kareem,
yeah,
Michael, Olajuwon, Patrick, Robinson.
Yeah.
What was that era like? Because that era made it possible for this era. Yeah. And I don't know if this era gives that era enough credit, and maybe that era doesn't give this era enough credit.
Well, that's a great question. We should always give credit to the guys who came before us.
Correct.
Always. Because if it wasn't for those guys, Nobody would be, y'all making this money because y'all were born at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
You're not better than Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird,
right?
Kareem, Wilt, Bill Russell. You're not better than those guys.
Well, let me ask you this. Let me push back. Those guys, but I'm saying average.
Yeah.
If you look at the teams now, guys are more skilled. You have more guys that can shoot the equivalent yeah. of Reggie and Larry.
Yes.
On a team.
Just be appreciative of that generation.
Okay.
I got number love for these young guys because number one, they're great.
Yes.
But they should always have great appreciation for the older guys because those guys did all the heavy lifting. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like being black, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I have so much love for older black people.
Absolutely.
Because I don't know what it's like for people to spray me with a water hose.
Sick the dog.
Sick the dog. Or tell me, we're taping this in the Four Seasons. We couldn't have been here.
No.
They said, take your black up to the Motel 6 and do this interview.
Right.
Like, if you can't, every time I meet an older black person, again, example, one of my mentors was Joe Morgan.
Okay.
He called his dad one day. He said, Dad, we're going to meet Jackie Robinson tomorrow. He said, what do I say? He says, just tell him thank you. And I think every time I meet an older black person, I want to say thank you because y'all did all the heavy lifting. Yeah. Y'all did all the heavy lifting.
What they had to endure.
Ugh. I can't even imagine. Like I can go into any restaurant I want to.
Anyone.
I can stay at any hotel I want to. I don't even know what it's like when people say, well, you can't stay here. You or good to the back of the bus.
Back of the bus. What? Or the movie theaters. I'm old enough to remember the movie theaters, the black sat up top.
Yeah.
You couldn't sit down low.
Yeah.
Now, I'm old enough. I do remember yeah. that.
And so the analogy of every basketball player today, just say, yo, man, I want to thank you. Not even me.
Right.
Because I made a good living.
Mm-hmm.
But every time I meet an older guy, I'm like, yo, man, thank you for what you did for me. But every time I meet Magic and Bird, I tell them guys, man, thank y'all. Because in sports, there are a lot of great players.
Mm-hmm.
But there's only a few guys who move the needle.
Correct.
Like in golf, there are a lot of great players today. But Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, Gary Player, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods, those guys took the sport to a whole nother level. Like, there are a lot of great players, but very few players are like, oh, I got to go watch that guy on television.
Right.
We need to do the TV deal because of that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And all you want from any generation is, number one, leave it better.
Correct.
Like, I'm disappointed in these guys today with this low management. I say, yo, man, first of all, we're not teachers. We're not nurses. We're not in the service. People who work like hard every day.
Yeah, for sure.
We play a stupid basketball game for 3 or 4 days a week. You're not going to play more than 3 or 4 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to make 30, 40 million, 60 million. I'm pretty sure the nurse don't want to go to work sometime.
Yeah. She can't low manage.
Yeah, she can't. I'm pretty sure teachers can't low manage. I says, man, just play basketball. You got the best shoes. Can you imagine Bill Russell playing in those canvas shoes?
The Chuck Taylors?
Chuck Taylors. Can you imagine?
No support.
And they played every game for $3,000 a year. And you can't just like, of course you're sore. I'm pretty sure doctors and nurses are sore. But man, just to be appreciative of how lucky and blessed we are to do something stupid and make a gazillion dollars.
How different would your career have been if you weren't drafted and played in the era of Michael Jordan? Do you want a title?
That's a great question. I don't know, but I'm glad I played in his era because number one, you want to play in a great player, the greatest, or you know, it's a debate between him and LeBron. Some people still think Kareem.
Mm-hmm.
You want to play in that because number one, what Michael did, going back to what we talking about, how to respect for the older generation.
Mm-hmm.
If it wasn't for Michael,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't make millions of dollars from Nike a year.
Right.
LeBron, Kobe wouldn't make millions of dollars from Nike a year. If it wasn't for Michael Jordan, We all wouldn't have commercials. People act like athletes always did commercials. No. Number one, none of us had a shoe deal until Michael. None of us shot commercials until Michael. So whether you want to debate who's the greatest, that guy is the reason we make. That's the reason I think about this. And when I was in, it was really fun in that movie Air, because I'm technically in the movie because me and Mike are in the same generation. His mom and dad having the forethought to say he gonna get a piece of the shoe,
right?
And then Matt Damon, who plays Sonny, says, "Well, we don't do it like that." Miss Jordan said, "Yeah, we do it like that." And because of that, I made millions of dollars from Nike, just from and also from my signature shoe.
Right.
So I lost to Michael Jordan. It would have been great. And the only thing I ever felt bad about, Shannon, to be honest with you, I couldn't win the 76ers, not the 76ers, the Suns, the championship.
Right.
Because in Philly, they had one. In Houston, they had one. I have always felt bad that I wasn't able to bring a championship to Phoenix, because that's my home.
Mm-hmm.
They gave me, when I got traded there, my life just changed dramatically. Because, man, all I wanted was some help.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're a great player, man, it's hard to go out there. You know, because there's a couple things that happened to me that really, because I was getting so depressed in Philly, because I was saying to myself, damn, I suck as a basketball player. I says, we get beat in the first round every year. And I'm like, I know I'm great, but our team wasn't very good. But I'm like, yo, man, and I'm having my private moments. I'm talking to my friends. I'm like, man, am I not good at basketball? I think I'm great, blah, blah, blah. And then when they called me for the dream team, I was like, damn, I am pretty good.
Right.
I'm like, I am good. Thank you. Thank you. And then when I got traded to Phoenix, they gave me Dan Marley and Kevin Johnson and Mark West and those guys. I'm like, because when I got there that first day, I said, guys, I think I'm the best basketball player in the world. We're going to play the Bulls for the championship. Michael Jordan just has some more help. I'm just as good as him. They look at me like I'm crazy. They're like, what? I says, I think I'm the best basketball player in the world. Y'all gonna find out right now, because we're gonna go out here and start kicking some
right.
I told them that the first day. And there was a turning point in the season, and I know Michael well.
Mm-hmm.
We got off to a good start. We played the Bulls, and he just kicked our. And I was saying to myself, he know we're going to play them in the finals. He wants to send us a message. So after the game, I told him, I said, guys, we got to get better. That guy sent me a message tonight, and I didn't like the message.
But I received it.
Yeah, I received it. And then we went on like a 12, 13 game winning streak, finished with the best record in the NBA, get to the finals. And I said, I get the chance to prove my point. And I'll tell you, Sean, that's the first time in my life I felt like, I said, damn, that guy's better at basketball than me. Because I had my chance, a showdown at the OK Corral. And so, no, it was an honor. Same thing I say, but Bird and Magic, Kareem, it was just a great time.
This concludes the first half of my conversation. Part two is also posted, and you can access it to whichever podcast platform you just listened to part one on. Just simply go back to Club Shay Shay profile, and I'll see you there.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now, you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Looking for a new show to dive into? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like the full season of FX's epic limited series, Shogun, FX's new international spy thriller, The Veil, starring Emmy and Golden Globe winner Elizabeth Moss. And don't miss the all-new crime series, Under the Bridge, inspired by shocking true events and starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone. It's all new and it's all streaming now on Hulu.